Welcome to another episode of Preferred Walk-On, PFF's College Football Show. I'm your host, Max Chadwick, alongside my co-host, Dalton Wasserman, with our Week 5 preview episode, Dalton, previewing the only five biggest games this week. Last week, we did 7 because we, quite frankly, had to do 7. This week, we have 5 games, which we usually do every single week, but it's still a loaded 5 games that we got this week, man.
Yeah, we got some good ones for sure. Ranked matchups, of course, the Pac-12 center stage again with USC, Colorado, and Utah, Oregon State on a Friday night. We get Friday night lights again. You're going to get some tight games, some wild ones. I think we're going to see a little bit of madness this week. It feels like somebody's going down. It's been hard to decide who you. I mean, you've also got probably the biggest game in Duke football history.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot of energy in a couple of these buildings, and we very well could see an upset or two, a big one that really has big ramifications down the line.
Absolutely. So, again, last week we had 6 games between ranked teams, which, again, was tied for the most since 2017. This week, still 4, man. It's still 4, which you don't really get as many as 4. So, 4 ranked games that we're talking about today, including a USC-Colorado game. USC-Colorado that we'll get to as well, which is a fantastic game, maybe the most must-watch game, obviously, of the weekend. But the first one we're talking about, Dalton, is the other Pac-12 game that we're talking about, a Friday night Pac-12 game. So that should be pretty exciting. Number 10 Utah at number 19 Oregon State. Dalton, what is the one thing you're looking forward to in this game?
You're looking at the two most unique and the two most physical teams in the Pac-12. They have the same goals. They want to run the football. They want to play defense. They want to play games in a phone booth. And it's an interesting matchup, especially with Utah now having to go to Corvallis. They've got 2 big home wins against Florida and against UCLA. They've really stepped up their game stopping the run the last 2 weeks. They, you would look at them for the season and go, well, they're 66 in run D grade. But over the last 2 weeks, they moved up to 6th. And their performance in run defense against UCLA is what won them the ball game, outside of the pick 6 on the first play. Oregon State's going to have to find some holes here because we've talked about them over the last week. They want to win a certain way. They want to run the football off tackle over and over and over and occasionally get a shot on play action with Uiagalelei. The biggest thing Oregon State's going to have to do is read the fronts. All right, when Utah's in a 4-man front, 79th in the country in run D grade. Okay, wow. They've got this thing where they kind of rotate between a 4-man front and a 5-man front. Their 5-man front is elite. When they have 5 defensive linemen, they're an elite, elite run-stopping team. It caused UCLA problems. Mm-hmm. It caused Florida problems early on. Against Baylor, you could see kind of the shift between the two. In a 4-man front, Baylor had a lot of success running the ball on them. And in a 5, it got a little bit better for Utah. They really like to mix it up with their fronts depending on run and pass situation. The other big thing I think Oregon State needs to do is have a threat with Uiagalelei running the ball. They did a better job of this last week against Washington State. The first 3 games, he only had 11 carries for 43 yards. And last week, he had 6 for 72. He scored a touchdown in all 4 games, but he got more involved, especially in the second half last week against Washington State. You can see Utah, their backside defenders, if they don't respect the quarterback run, they sell out. They sell out on traditional run, right, to the back. Baylor had a threat at least. You see Robertson only carried 4 times for about 20 yards for Baylor, but the threat of speed option, the threat of read option, all of that stuff really made Utah stay home. You have to make them stay home as opposed to just selling out. Graham Mertz for Florida is not a running threat. Last week, Dante Moore was not a running threat. I'm not sure he ran the ball. I think he had 2 scrambles, but in the read option game and anything in the design game, Moore was non-existent. So when Utah's backside defenders can sell out to the back, they're an elite run defense. I think Oregon State has to involve Uiagalelei in the run game to make the gaps open up for them. Make Utah play with gap discipline, especially on the backside, and then you have a chance to run the football because they're not going to drop back on Utah and just throw. It's not their style. Uiagalelei over the last 3 weeks is the least accurate passer in the Pac-12 after a really good week 1 start against weaker competition. Oregon State has to win a certain way, and the way they're going to do that, I think, needs to be with an added dimension of their quarterback running football.
Absolutely, and I think the biggest storyline is the other quarterback in this game, and quite frankly, who will be the other quarterback in this game? Because Cameron Rising last week was a full participant in practice. All the reports that came out before that game against UCLA was, hey, he's going to be able to go. Then all of a sudden, like a few hours before kick, even the night before, reports started to trickle out that said, hey, yeah, Cam's not going to be playing this week. This week, he is splitting first-team reps with Nate Johnson in Utah, and yeah, man, it's going to be interesting in whether or not Cam Rising, and also Brant Keithy, we don't know too much about his status after he also recovers from torn ACL. We don't know about his practice status as much as Rising, but they need both those guys back, man. And it's kind of funny to me, though, honestly, because, like, listen, Utah 4-0 for the first time since 2017. They beat two ranked teams, Florida, who's currently ranked, UCLA, who was ranked at the time. In my interview with Kyle Whittingham, the head coach, I asked him, I was like, hey, coach, what is the most important thing for Utah to three-peat this year? And usually you get coach speak saying, we just got to do our job, you know, do your assignment and all that. He told me the biggest thing, he goes, above all else, Cam Rising has got to be able to go. So that to me was like, okay, Kyle was saying, telling me, hey, we need Cam or else this is not going to be great. They're 4-0 right now, man. They're doing well without Cam Rising. So maybe Kyle Whittingham was even, you know, holding his cards close to his chest a little bit in that interview with me. But yeah, man, they need him back though, because this has been the 11th worst Power 5 team in terms of EPA per pass. Oregon State has a really good defense, top 25 in that same metric as well. And then obviously you mentioned, did a great breakdown of the Oregon State run game, because that really is the key to this game, in my opinion, is Oregon State is fourth in EPA per rush, tied for fifth in rushing grade, and fourth in run blocking grade among Power 5 teams. 7 yards per attempt against Washington State, but the problem was, like we mentioned before, they could run the ball in the first half. You know, DJ Uiagalelei only had 12 dropbacks in the first half. He had 26 in the second half because they were down by 3 scores and he had to come back. And he didn't play well, man. He only had a 50% completion rate and a 61 passing grade. And the other thing you mentioned too, Utah has experience with teams that want to run the football, dominant run games, and inconsistent quarterbacks. Utah has experience with making those teams rely on the quarterbacks. Remember that week one game, Graham Mertz was relied on in that game. He only ran the ball 16 times compared to 51 dropbacks in that game. As we saw in the Tennessee game for Florida, Florida wants to rely on that run game, and when they can be dominant. But if Utah can take away that run game like they did with Florida, like to Oregon State, this could be a problem for Oregon State, man, with DJ Uiagalelei, because you know Utah's run defense has been really good. You see right there, 1.7 yards per attempt allowed. That leads the Power 5. So Utah's had a good run defense, and I think it's a great point that you made, that it really is a great run defense when there's a 5-man front. If I am Kyle Whittingham, I'm probably sending a 5-man front most of this game, because I think Oregon State's really going to try to rely on that run game. But ultimately, Dalton, who will come out on top in this Friday night Pac-12 showdown?
It's going to be ugly. You mentioned the 5-man front, and I think you're right. I think you're going to see it a ton with Oregon State playing so many tight ends. They play a ton of 12 personnel, and they just run right behind it. I think Rising being in this game would be a huge difference. I think this is a tight one. It's on the road. It's a short week for Utah. I'm going to take Utah actually on the road 21-17, not knowing 100% if Rising is going to play. It would make a big difference because the last 2 weeks, Oregon State's really struggling in coverage. Washington State got vertical on last week, as we covered on Monday. San Diego State actually got behind them a few times and just missed the throw. Oregon State, the cracks in the secondary are showing, and if Rising plays, I think this is a little more decisively Utah. But I think the lesson here, you know, we talked about it Monday, and I think Oregon State, with their style, much like Florida and much like what happened in UCLA the other day, don't fall behind Utah.
Yeah,
you can't. You just can't. They need to establish this run game. They need to get a little creative early and get a lead if they're going to win this game. But Utah's defense, that's an elite unit. It's the best unit on the field in this game, and I think it's the one team, maybe not the only team, that's probably called Washington and Oregon are physical, but Utah matches their physicality, you know, whereas Washington State last week didn't. but they were also explosive enough to get ahead. This is a completely different game than they just played, and I think Utah is going to be up to the task. They just, you know, locked down a UCLA team in the running game who, coming into that game, was leading the country in yards per carry. I'm going to take Utah 21-17, and I think if Rising plays, then you could see the margin a little wider than that.
Yeah, we're both taking Utah in this game, and Utah is actually the underdog in this game. Utah is currently +3 at Oregon State right now, and you know, both of us picked UCLA over Utah last week. We were wrong, and Utah fans in our comment section were very quick to let us know that we were wrong. I think now we're throwing them a bone here. I think we're both picking Utah. I'm picking Utah 24-21 in this game. Listen, man, this Utah team is already a top 10 team in the country without its star quarterback, and I am right now cautiously optimistic that Rising will be able to go. I have no intel on that, just from what I've seen in terms of the practice reports. He's been a full participant in practice without limitations for 2 weeks now. Hopefully that means he's finally able to go on Friday night, but we will see. And if Rising makes his debut, man, they're already a top 10 team in the country. They could be a lot better than that, which is a scary sight for a lot of other Pac-12 teams, including these two Pac-12 teams that we're talking about, Dalton. The next game we're talking about is number 8 USC at Colorado, noon Eastern time on Fox. Dalton, how do you think Colorado will respond after getting blown out of the water by Oregon?
I think it'll be better. I do. Oregon is not. It's like the worst matchup possible for Colorado. That you just talk about their offensive line, the running game, Irving and James, and everything they can do in the run game. It's just not gonna be what Colorado wants to play stylistically, right? USC is kind of like Colorado on steroids.
Yeah.
It's about the quarterback and the weapons, and they can run the ball. Don't get me wrong. They can run the ball too, but it's at the end of the day, it's about Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
And just like for Colorado at the end of the day, it's about Shador, right? And the weapons and high flying and making reads and making huge throws. And it's going to be fun to watch these two quarterbacks on the same field, but Colorado, they do have to find some balance, though. They have the fewest rushing yards per game in the Power Five. Their lack of balance, they're only running, I believe it's 56 yards a game, somewhere around there. They need to find balance so bad because, you know, you saw Arizona State even really unexpectedly as a 34-35 point underdog stay in the game against USC really down to the wire because they could run the ball. Skedebo ran the ball really physically against them. You have to find some way. I mean, it's hard enough to beat USC. It's going to take a minimum of 45 points, I think. They're going to score against anybody. They're probably the best offense in the country. You have to have balance. You just do. It's going to be hard for Colorado, even against the, you know, lesser teams in the Pac-12, to win without some sort of balance. They have to get Hankerson and Dylan Edwards going. I know they don't want to run Shador a whole lot because he's not built necessarily for the design game, but I think they're going to respond. They're at home. It's a better team for them to play stylistically. It's a tough task for sure, especially again without Travis Hunter this week, but I think it's going to look better than you saw. I just think Oregon, especially at Oregon, is the worst matchup you could find for Colorado with the way they struggle in the trenches.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, my biggest matchup for me is just basically, can Colorado keep up, man? Because Oregon right now is second in the country in terms of EPA per play. The only one above them is USC. And Oregon, in that game against Colorado, scored a touchdown on 6 of its first 7 drives of that game. So that game was over quickly. USC is even better offense than Oregon. I agree with you. I think it might be the best offense in the country right now. And it's not just Caleb Williams and that electric receiving core, which has been fantastic to start the season. Marshawn Lloyd is currently the second highest graded running back in the country. And you saw what Bucky Irving was able to do last week against that Colorado defense. This could be the Marshawn Lloyd game, man. I really think this kid can have a huge game against Colorado. The only chance Colorado has, like you said, is probably score 45 plus points, man, because this is, and listen, I'm not going to say they are going to score that many, but they have a better chance of making this a shootout than the Oregon game. Oregon is very well coached defensively. Dan Lanning is a brilliant defensive mind. They got good players on that side of the ball. USC currently 50th in the country in EPA per play on defense, and they face two offenses that are outside the top 100 in EPA per play, and another one who's outside the top 70 in EPA per play. So USC's defense has played a weak schedule, and it's still not looked great so far. So I think Shedeur Sanders could have a big game in this one. The problem is, though, you see right there, he had 8 sacks. He was sacked 8 times by Oregon. USC, again, weak competition, but right now they're 3rd in the country with an 84.9 pass rushing grade. Now, the run defense, I think, is the issue with the USC defense mostly right now. So maybe Shedeur won't have as much success, but I agree with you. I think Dylan Edwards, man, he's got to have a big game as well. I think Marshawn Lloyd could have a big game, and Dylan Edwards might have to have a big game in this one. So, yes, it is between Caleb Williams. Yes, it is between Shedeur Sanders. That's going to be the headline for this game. But this could turn into a running game a lot more than people realize with Marshawn Lloyd and Dylan Edwards. So, yeah, Colorado's going to have to keep up, man, to make this a game, because if you thought that Oregon offense looked elite against Colorado, wait until you see Caleb Williams, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, the guy who's going to go number one overall no matter who has the pick, basically. Wait until you see that offense with Lincoln Riley, the best offensive mind in the country, by the way. Colorado better buckle up, because it could be another long day for the defense. But I do think Colorado's offense has a better chance of making it closer than the Oregon game, at least. But ultimately, Dalton, how close will Colorado make this game?
Not that close. Not as wide as the Oregon game. I'm gonna say 49-31 USC. Okay. There should be opportunities for them in this game. I think USC, they're not like that physical on defense. Yeah. Colorado's just their primary issue in this game is one team. USC has some semblance of balance. Now, does it come against a ton of light boxes because you have to sit back against them? Yeah, and sometimes they throw it over your heads anyway. Yeah. But Colorado has to find something up front. They have to find anything to get Edwards. They just need – they don't even need to run for 250, 300 in this game, but it's got to be respectable. They can't win games continuing to run for 55 yards a game. But this is a good opportunity for him. I think the pass rush, you know, Sanders does get the ball out quickly. A lot of those sacks last week were him just kind of holding the ball too long. Their offensive line graded better than I thought they would at the end of the day. And Sanders, you know, he would much rather take a sack than throw the ball into a dangerous spot. I can't blame him for that. But USC, it's just too much. I think it'll be a better showing for Colorado at home against a team that's stylistically a little more favorable to them, but USC, you know, I don't know about you, I believe they're one of the 4 best teams in the country. You have an offense like that just, they put up 42 to 45 to 55 points at will. Colorado is another game where, again, I still like Colorado a lot. This is just another game they're not ready for.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I had USC my predicted playoff before the season, because like you said, that offense, man, is going to be tough to stop. And while the defense, you know, is still an issue, and honestly, man, I think it might be a coaching issue with Alex Grinch, because they have some dudes on that defense. It's not like it's a talent thing. They have some really good players. Bear Alexander's playing great. Kalen Bullock is one of the best safeties in the country. They got other really good 5-star players on that defense. It's just they haven't meshed together yet. So that's the issue with USC's defense right now. But I agree with you. I could see USC coming out of that Pac-12. And ultimately, I think this is the year, no matter who comes out of the Pac-12 this year, should deserve a playoff spot, honestly, because of how good that Pac-12 conference is this season. But I got USC as well, almost exactly the same score as you. I have USC 49, Colorado 24. So I have Colorado scoring one fewer touchdown than you do. Listen, it won't be as embarrassing as last week, but Colorado can't match USC's offense. And to be fair to the Buffaloes, there might not be any team in the country that can match USC's offense. So I have USC winning this one pretty handedly in this one as well. But another game that we're talking about, Dalton, is number 24, Kansas, at number 3, Texas, which is at 3:30 p.m. on ABC. And the storyline for me, Dalton, is can Kansas shock the world again? Because 2 years ago, both Texas and Kansas had new head coaches in Steve Sarkisian and Lance Leipold, who are both still there. And Leipold and the Jayhawks, man, colossal upset. They won 57-56 in overtime, despite being 31-point underdogs. It was the first time ever that Kansas beat Texas in Austin. Now they're going to try to do it for the second straight time and the second time ever. So Kansas has some Lance Leipold and the Jayhawks have some success in Austin. But ultimately, Dalton, what is the matchup that you're looking forward to see if the Jayhawks can pull it off again this year?
It's actually about which team can run the ball. Okay. Kansas is an elite running team, especially to the edges. If they get off tackle, they are the sixth best team in the country getting just to the edges. The way they run east and west with a number of different concepts, and even in their passing game, throwing the screen game and bubbles and swings and everything they throw at you to stress the wide side of the field is a problem. They have a ton of speed, and they get outside constantly. If you don't set the edge on Kansas, they'll get you all day. Now, as far as their run defense, this was the biggest problem last year. Yeah. Last year, 104th in the country in run defense grade, and Texas put up over 400 yards on the ground against them. Now, I know they had Robinson and Roschon Johnson and all the guys they had last year running the ball for Texas. That's how they beat them. I mean, it was it 55-10, I believe? 51-10, I think it was. 427 yards Texas ran for last season on Kansas. This year, all of a sudden, Kansas is 13th in the country in run defense grade, holding BYU to 9 rushing yards last week. 9. And BYU was expected to be able to run the ball on them, and Kansas was just too physical, which is odd. If that is a sustained dimension they have, if they're that physical and their run defense is going to not – you know, just have teams run roughshod all over them. Even if they get in shootouts, Kansas doesn't want the ball run on them like that. You never do. No defensive coordinator wants the ball run on them for 427 yards. But Texas, the last 2 weeks since Ewers played an elite game against Alabama, it's gone kind of back to being more workmanlike on offense. You know, the Wyoming game was a struggle. They're better than Baylor, so they were able to be more conservative, but Ewers only had an ADOT of 6 yards last week. They're throwing short passes. They're running the football. And honestly, you know, I'm going to pose this question to you based on the numbers we have right now and what Texas has looked like outside of the Alabama, and even in part during the Alabama. Is Texas a defensive team instead of – because I know we think about Ewers and Worthy and what they did scoring 34 on Alabama, which is wicked impressive, especially in Tuscaloosa. But it looks to me that the defense is actually the foundation for Texas.
I would agree, man. And I would say Ewers was lights out against Alabama. He's been back to the inconsistent quarterback that we saw last year, man. So, listen, I think he's better than a lot of the games he showed last year. But, man, this is a Texas offense. I was like, okay, it's going to be tough for you to stop them if Ewers can put it together. Because you got Xavier Worthy. You got Jatavion Sanders, who's one of the best tight ends in the country. A.D. Mitchell has been a stud for them, transferring in from Georgia. I said, it's going to be tough. And all the other receivers they got there as well. I thought it was going to be tough for you to stop that offense. The Texas defense, like you mentioned, has been really fantastic so far to start the season. So top 10 in defensive grade, top 10 in EPA per play in the Power 5. I mean, Texas defense has been really, really good. For me, the matchup I'm watching is Jalen Daniels, man. Because 2 years ago, Jalen Daniels was the driving force in that upset. You know, he was only a sophomore in that game. He had a 90.9 passing grade in that game. 90.5 passing grade this season, which is fifth among Power 5 quarterbacks. But like we said, 2 years ago, the Texas defense was very vulnerable. This year, it's not that, man. They are really, really playing really good football right now, especially in the coverage unit, I think. And Texas, you know, as much as the offense has quote-unquote struggled so far this season, they still have put up 30-plus points in every single game that they play this year, including Alabama, who has, as we've seen, one of the best defenses in college football. So I think Jalen Daniels is going to have another huge, huge game, and that Kansas offense is going to have to step up, man, because chances are Texas will probably be able to score 30-plus points once again in this game. But ultimately, Dalton, who do you think is coming out on top in this major Big 12 showdown?
This was a hard one the more I watched both teams. I think this is going to be a really, really hard-nosed battle. I think it's going to be a shootout. Texas, you know, for as well as their defense played at Alabama, we've been over Alabama's struggles for a couple of weeks. They have not seen an offense like this. They get east and west with anybody. Jalen Daniels, now, you know, this year he comes into this year 100%. He's healthy. Hopefully he doesn't get hurt again like he did last year. Because when he was 100% last year, it was spectacular. He's really been great. Anytime he steps on a football field 100%, he's been great. I'm actually going to take the Jayhawks here. I have a feeling this is where our madness is coming. I know They never won in Austin before. Now you pick them twice in a row. I really am curious to see if their defense – they're not going to be great in this game. Look, going into Austin against this Texas team is not going to be easy. But I'm really curious to see if they can hold it together in the front seven and make Ewers beat them. Look, for some reason, we've seen Ewers tee off on Alabama twice. Yeah. And otherwise, it's been this back-and-forth thing of, like, you see an elite throw here, and then you see a handful of inaccurate. And I have a feeling they're going to load the box again, and they're going to try to make Ewers beat them. And their offense, like I said, Texas has not seen a team like this. You know, Alabama struggled. Baylor really just can't score.
Yeah,
that's a struggle for them to score. It's been very workmanlike, and I know they won 38-6 last week against Baylor, but Texas offense, it's been workmanlike. They're getting through. They're winning ball games again. I think they were tied at 10 with Iowa after three quarters. Was that it's somewhere?
Oh, Wyoming, rough, yeah, and yeah.
It was 10-10 late in the game. Sorry, Wyoming, yeah. which I mean, they're kind of similar, but
yeah.
it's kind of a gut feeling more than anything. Kansas, they're explosive offensively. They have a ton of speed. If they can hold things down in the front seven, I think, you know, reasonably enough, you know, last year, I don't think they're going to give up 430 yards again. Bijan Robinson's not there. Roshan Johnson's not there. I'm going to take Kansas 41-38.
Wow. I love it, man. Kansas right now is a 16.5 point underdog. So, listen, if you're a betting man, that Kansas money line, I don't know what quite it is, but Dalton's, you know, saying take it, man, because I love that, man. That's a juicy upset. I'm going to pick Texas in this one. I think they're going to win 40-24. I think it will be close for a while, but then I think Quinn Ewers in the receiving core will kick it into high gear in the third and fourth quarter like they did in that Wyoming game, really. So I think it will be close. I'm not picking Kansas to win, but I love that, man. I think that's a very, very fun upset, and definitely it's one of the biggest spreads, I think, in this slate, besides the USC-Colorado one that we're talking about. So, yeah, I love that, man. That's a big, big-time upset. Another game that we're talking about is an SEC West game between number 13 LSU and number 20 Ole Miss. And the storyline, really, Dalton, is pretty simple. It's which team can get back on track, because last week Ole Miss lost to Alabama. Right now, LSU and Ole Miss are two of four teams that are still in the top 20, even though they already have a loss. Alabama, of course, one of the other ones, and Oregon State, who we already talked about, is another one of them too. LSU lost its first game of the season against now number 5 Florida State. So the winner of this game proves that it's a legitimate contender in the SEC this season. The loser is definitely falling out of the top 25 and has an uphill battle the rest of the year. What is the matchup that you're watching in this game, though, Dalton?
It's a couple of things. I think starting out, we need to see if Ole Miss can rebound. That was that game against Alabama. That was rough. I mean, yeah. Bama coming off of all of the controversy that they were from the previous week. And at Ole Miss, that was the lowest graded game overall that they played under Lane Kiffin. They couldn't find big plays. They didn't complete a deep ball. Judkins, I believe, only had 56 yards or so. Nothing was in sync. And, you know, we talked about Monday. I thought they came out with the wrong game plan defensively. But that's also just kind of how they run their defense. It's 3-3-5, sit back, don't get thrown all over. It's kind of this thing where they'll let you run the ball. And I don't always, you know, against a team like Alabama, I don't think you want to do that. But that was honestly, by some metrics, the worst game they've played under Lane Kiffin. And yeah, how they're going to go home and rebound now against the team that beat them by 3 touchdowns last year. This is a massive game. This is now the second biggest game remaining in the SEC West, other than when LSU is going to go play Bama. I got two teams right here, first of all, that are not covering well at all. They are giving up deep shots. They're both in the bottom 5 in the SEC in deep coverage grade. LSU is by far the worst coverage grade in the SEC right now. I think by almost 10 points, a 62.2. We're not used to this with LSU. I mean, yeah, we're used to them being DBU, Patrick Peterson, Jamal Adams, Tyrann Mathieu, and Derek Stingley. They don't have that in the secondary, yeah, right now. They're giving up big plays. There's a big, big contrast right now between LSU giving up big plays and Ole Miss coming off a game where they hit no deep shots, not a single completed pass over 20 yards in the air. I'm curious to see if Ole Miss can find the rhythm again in the passing game, because if they can't make plays over the top, the holes are going to continue to close for Judkins, and everything's going to continue to look clunky. On the other side, Ole Miss not covering the deep ball well. I believe it might be the worst. It's the worst in the SEC, I think it is. Somewhere around a 42. Look, Malik Nabers is raging hot.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, he's hit a gear where you might call him the best receiver in the country. He's just him and Daniels. They have that thing going right now where those two guys alone, really last week they did, those two guys alone can win them ball games. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see which team's secondary is going to hold up on the back end, especially deep. And then you got an LSU secondary. We'll go to them for a second. Giving up 9 touchdowns, the most in the SEC. Missed 19 tackles, the most in the SEC. A lot of issues for both teams on the back end. I'm curious to see who's going to make the big plays.
Absolutely, and not only Malik Nabers. I mean, he had 8 catches for 130 yards and 2 scores last week against Arkansas. Brian Thomas, man, has really emerged as that number 2 receiver in that LSU offense. He had 5 catches for 133 yards and 2 touchdowns against Arkansas last week, averaging almost 27 yards per catch, man. He has been a great, great deep threat for LSU. Like you mentioned, both secondaries are struggling right now. And my matchup mainly that I'm watching, besides LSU on offense, is Ole Miss's passing attack. Because, yes, it didn't look great against Alabama. But then again, Alabama is a really good secondary, as we talked about extensively before. Ole Miss, with Lane Kiffin calling the shots, is usually always going to have a really, really damn good passing game. And they have that this year, 81.4 offensive grade on passing plays this season, which is 10th among Power 5 schools. Jackson Dart, 89.1 grade this season, which is 3rd among SEC quarterbacks. Also, most importantly, in my opinion, last week against Alabama, the guys that we mentioned who were hurt and banged up in that Ole Miss receiving core, Caden Prescore in the tight end, Zachary Franklin, the wide receiver, and wide receiver Trey Harris, all 3 of them played against Alabama last week. So Ole Miss finally has a healthy receiving core. That is a problem, because as you put it so well, LSU, the issue with that defense is the secondary, which we had a feeling that would be going into the season. 62.5 coverage grade, 7th worst in the Power 5 right now. The way for LSU, in my opinion, to slow down this passing game is to get pressure on Jackson Dart. Ole Miss right now is kind of a middle-of-the-pack offensive line in terms of pass blocking grade, and the way for LSU to get consistent pressure is something that we keep talking about. Let Harold Perkins rush the freaking passer, man. This guy is one of the best pass rushers in the country, and yet he's only rushed the passer on 40% of his passing plays this season. The other 60% he's spent in coverage as an off-ball linebacker. And the comparison I want to keep bringing to the table to just kind of contextualize how insane that is imagine if the Dallas Cowboys put Micah Parsons in coverage on most of the passing plays. That's malpractice. This is what they're doing with Harold Perkins right now. It's an issue. And with that coverage unit struggling so much for LSU, they need Harold Perkins to make an impact in this game. So I think this is the game. Brian Kelly, this is the game. Unleash him, man. Finally, pin his ears back. Let him go. Let him see ball, get ball, as you said. I am really struggling to see why they're not rushing Harold Perkins so much when he is one of the best pass rushers in the country, man. And they're putting him in coverage on most of his snaps. So I don't understand that. But yeah, man, I think that's the key, I think, for LSU in this game, is just let Perkins rush the passer. Ultimately, though, Dalton, who do you have coming out on top, and who is maybe the biggest challenger to Alabama in the SEC West this season?
I think you make a great point on Perkins, but you know, especially look, if LSU is going to struggle with him in coverage anyway,
yeah,
then just rush the passer. Just go ahead and send the dogs, because you know, and try to speed up the quarterback's clock and all that stuff. I think it's LSU. Okay. Ole Miss, the big thing for me, as always, when if I'm playing LSU, even more than Nabers and Thomas, and I you have to find a way to contain Jaden Daniels And last year he ran for 137 yards on Ole Miss. Ole Miss just struggles. The way their defense is designed, they struggle with quarterback run. Three-man front, they kind of don't really set a wide edge like that. Big-time problems when there's either a design quarterback run or kind of a read option worked in there. Their run defense grade is 120th in the country. They just, the way their defense is designed and the way they react to it, quarterback run is just always going to be an issue. It wasn't like a huge issue last week against Alabama. Milroe had a couple big runs, but it just the style of play on their defense is not conducive to stopping Jaden Daniels. And yeah, now if Neighbors is going to play like this and he's got a two-way go, I'm not sure how Ole Miss's defense holds up the way that they play it. You know, looking at it again last year, that was just the biggest theme, is they can't catch Daniels, and their defense isn't designed schematically to help with that. They would have to really drastically change their defense, and they're not going to do it. They would rather just line up the way they line up. And, you know, it's funny because their defense is designed with five on the back end constantly to not give up big shots, and yet they do anyway. So I'm really not sure if Neighbors and Daniels, especially in the passing game, are going to play like this, how Ole Miss is going to stop LSU. I'm going to take LSU 41-31.
Okay.
I'm just having a hard time, and it could be worse than that. If LSU's defense plays a little better, or if these Ole Miss receivers can't get in a rhythm, it could be worse. I know the game is at Ole Miss, but there's some issues rhythmically with their offense, and their defense is just not designed to stop Jaden Daniels at all. It feels like unless they change something, he's just going to have free reign. I mean, we learned last week, it's not like they're going to blitz, apparently, in big spots. Yeah. So if they just sit back and play the same style of defense they do, I'm not sure how Daniels doesn't have success, because he's not going to turn the ball over. He doesn't do that. So I don't know what exactly their plan is for Jaden Daniels. They didn't have one last year, and I haven't seen anything different from their defense this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And that Ole Miss secondary even struggled with Alabama last week. And we've gone over extensively how much Alabama's passing game has struggled so far this season. Jaden Daniels, Malik Neighbors, Brian Thomas, Mason Taylor at tight end. That's a different animal, man. It's a different animal that you're dealing with. I got LSU in this game as well. I think it's going to be close, though, because I do think – I don't trust Brian Kelly to let Harold Perkins rush a passer again. I'm not expecting that. And I do think LSU's secondary is vulnerable with Jackson Dart and all those healthy receivers that he finally has now. I think it could turn into a shootout. Ultimately, I got LSU in a close one, though, 34-31. But this, to me, was the hardest game to predict, because I can really see – Ole Miss pulling out the upset here. But I'm taking, you know, two of the best quarterbacks in the SEC in this game, I think, between Jaden Daniels and Jackson Dart. And it could turn into a game where it's between Jaden Daniels and Jackson Dart going blow for blow. I would trust Daniels in that receiving core a little bit more in this game than I would Jackson Dart. So I'm taking LSU 34-31 in this one. I think it will be a really, really close game, though. Last one that we're talking about is number 11 Notre Dame at number 17 Duke, 7:30 p.m. on ABC. And the biggest storyline, Dalton, is, man, can Notre Dame recover from that gut punch that Ohio State gave in this past Saturday?
Yeah, it's a hard one. We mentioned it Monday, but the better team lost that football game. Notre Dame really played well for 57 minutes and then just didn't execute and got really outcoached down the stretch. They should have won that game, and they should probably, having won that game, have, you know, ended the week number 4 or 5 in the country.
Yeah.
This is a weird one. And I think you've got probably the biggest game maybe in Duke football history. Their defense is playing really well. Riley Leonard's playing clean. Duke's secondary has been spectacular. Digging into it, actually, I think more than anything on the field, I'm a little worried, other than, you know, they played Clemson week one and they won the game, and Clemson actually really made a lot of mistakes for Duke to take over that game. Duke hasn't played a whole lot of competition since then. Their last 2 weeks against UConn and Northwestern, who Northwestern is a disaster, and UConn, they've taken a step back this year. They're just their passing game. They don't have a quarterback. They can run the ball, but it's not what it was last year at UConn. So, and credit to Duke for dominating those teams, but I think more than anything, I need to see Riley Leonard make some big throws. Right, through four games, only three big time throws. Now he's got the fifth best overall grade of any quarterback in the country, but it's heavily carried by the fact that he's got an 88 rushing grade, which leads all quarterbacks. 19 forced missed tackles is third most. He's the style of play. Tell me if this sounds right, because the numbers just jumped out at me as similar. Will Levis in 2021 had a year like this.
Yeah.
Where he ran all over everybody. He just, you know, kind of this physical specimen sort of thing. He ran all over everybody. He had a solid passing grade somewhere in the low 80s, and I think he might have been the best runner in the country that year. But it just – he didn't make enough – like, he there were flash throws, but there weren't enough of them. And I know they talked about, you know, supporting cast at Kentucky not being great, and I think at Duke it's the same problem. There's not, like, a ton to work with. But Leonard – I need to see in a game like this that he can elevate the guys around him. I think he's played, like, in a functional sense, terrific football through four games, right? Very, very clean, run the ball when you need to, and just don't make mistakes, right? Because even against Clemson, that's how you beat Clemson right now. Yeah. You know, play defense and don't screw it up and stop the run as best you can, because Klubnik isn't ready to carry them, right? Florida State kind of did the same thing. Klubnik was better. They ran the ball. Florida State's front seven, we've been over all that. But Duke, I'm a little worried about the soft level of competition since that Clemson game. Because they really took that game over late. It was 14-7 for a while, and Clemson just couldn't get out of their own way.
Mm-hmm.
They're physical. I don't know if they're Notre Dame physical. Leonard, you know, I know there's some people for next year's draft really, really high on him. I don't know that I've seen the high end yet that I can put him in the in that class of guys. When we talk about Williams and May and Penix and maybe Sanders and all these other guys, this is the week you need to see it. I think if Duke is going to win this game, Riley Leonard kind of has to finally be Superman. And I'm a little worried with Notre Dame's defense. Look, outside of the last drive where they just blew it and they got outcoached, and Henderson's 61-yard run last week, Notre Dame's defense was spectacular outside of maybe a half dozen plays last week. They were just terrific. So this is not for Duke. This is about coming off of playing UConn and Northwestern. This is about as high a step up in competition as you could get.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of Riley Leonard, we actually have an interview with Riley. Great interview with Riley Leonard that you can check out as well. But yeah, man, this is the big story is for me on the Notre Dame side of things is like, man, you just suffered a gut-wrenching loss, agonizing loss to Ohio State that we talked about extensively in our review episode. You can check out as well. That was really on Notre Dame, man. The final two plays of that drive, Notre Dame had 10 defenders on the field. The touchdown, the missing defender was a defensive lineman exactly where Ohio State ran the ball, and Ohio State barely got over the goal line. So you could make the argument Notre Dame would have stopped them. The problem is now, Notre Dame doesn't have too much time to grieve that loss. It's not like you have a bye week or even playing a cupcake opponent. This is a good Duke team right now, and like you mentioned, this might be the biggest game in Duke football history. So Durham, all of Durham right now is locked in. So Notre Dame, after that loss, is going to have to rebound quickly against Duke. Duke, for the first time in program history, is hosting College Game Day this week. So like you said, this is going to be a massive game for the Blue Devils. Notre Dame better be ready for another fight, man, because it could come this week. So they got to be able to rebound from that Ohio State loss pretty quickly, man. So that's definitely one thing I'm keeping an eye out. And the other thing I want to keep an eye out is I think Duke, for Notre Dame's advantage, I think Duke might be a little outmatched in the run game on both sides of the ball. I think that could be a big, big problem. You see right there, Audric Estime, you can make the argument he's been the best running back in college football this year, leads the country with 591 rushing yards and a 92.1 grade. Duke, Notre Dame, 90.6 run defense grade as well, which is eighth best in the Power 5. Also have 98 run defense stops, which leads the Power 5 this year. Now, the leads Power 5 is a little misleading because Notre Dame has played basically an extra game than anyone else has so far this season because they haven't had a bye week and they played in week zero. But still, you see right there, eighth best run defense grade in the Power 5. So that doesn't really matter as much in terms of how many games he played. Duke, on the other side of the ball, Duke has the ninth worst run defense grade in the Power 5 right now at 64.6. And Audric Estime, I believe, is sixth in the country in forced missed tackle rate at about 42%. Duke has the third worst missed tackle rate in the Power 5. They missed 20% of their run defense tackle attempts so far this season. So Audric Estime could have a huge game. And then also Duke on offense, 12th worst run blocking grade in the Power 5 at 58.2, and they only average 1.5 yards before contact per attempt. And now Graham Barton, who's a left tackle we also interviewed on the show, you can check out, he's a fantastic left tackle, could be a day one or day two pick in the NFL draft, but the rest of that offensive line has struggled so far this season. Ultimately, Dalton, though, will the Blue Devils come out on top in Durham in what should be maybe the biggest game in program history?
I don't think so. I think they had their big one against Clemson, and I think this more to me really is about Notre Dame. Look, mentally, they do have to recover, but they have to remember that a loss at the buzzer to Ohio State does not take them out of the playoff mix.
No.
Look, if they run the table now with a win like this and a win later in the year, possibly if they find a way to beat USC, they're right back in. If they run the table, they'll probably be number three or four and make the playoff. They have to just refocus, and it's not an easy game on the road against a good team with a good defense to refocus. But I think Freeman has to, at some point, he has to have gone to his team and said, look, that one's on me. Yeah. And just move on and try to run the table. I think this is a good get right game for Notre Dame. I think they're still one of, they're ranked number 11 right now. I think they're still one of the 10 best teams in the country. I think they just ran into another one of the 10 best teams in the country. And the one thing you just mentioned, Duke's run defense, Notre Dame ran the ball really well against Ohio State. And Ohio State might have the best front seven in college football. They ran the ball really, really well in that game. And just, they didn't finish drives and they didn't finish the game. And the pressure got to Hartman. But Notre Dame's the better team in this game. Bigger, more physical, more to work with, and I don't think this is the game where we find Riley Leonard elevating the rest of what is probably an above average team to Notre Dame's level. Notre Dame was the better team in that game, coming in at number 9 over the number 6 team. They're still fantastic. They're very well rounded. Look, Duke, if they come out with a ton of energy and they execute at a high level, can keep this a close game. But I actually think Notre Dame just being more physical, and we talked about it last week, they don't allow big plays.
Yeah,
just don't. Their secondary is spectacular. I'm taking Notre Dame 28-13. Duke's defense could keep them in it for a while, but I just think Notre Dame wears them down, and I don't think Riley Leonard, he would have to play the best game he's played as a college football player. I just don't know that this is the game where he's going to do that. I don't see, I know it's not always about being flashy and all that stuff, but if his legs are what's going to carry them, I as the only thing on their offense in this game, they need to find somebody else that's explosive. Because even against Clemson, his feet were their best weapon. They really just dinked and dunked and threw the ball 5 yards down the field until Clemson screwed up or time ran out. Otherwise, their biggest play of the game was his scramble down the sideline for a touchdown. So I think Notre Dame knows that. I think they know they're the better team, the more physical team. And as long as they keep Leonard in the pocket and force him, look, I would get up and just go just press coverage. You got Leonard, who's 13th best in the country at throwing short passes, but Notre Dame's 16th best in the country at covering them. So if I'm Notre Dame, press man, maybe even blitz him, make him throw it over your head. See if he can make those throws. If he makes one or two of them, then you adjust. But I don't know that Duke has the weaponry to get down the field on Notre Dame. And I think Notre Dame, I still think this is a top 8 or 10 team that just blew a game in situational football. They should have beat Ohio State, and I think they're going to go in there and win. I'll take them 28-13.
Yeah, man. And listen, in that Riley Leonard interview, he actually mentioned how his mom is his biggest hater because he asked her to be, because, you know, he says, I was praised too much in my hometown growing up, so I wanted her, so I asked her to send me a "you suck" text every single game. Not only will his mom do that in this game, but he might even turn on the preferred walk-on channel, man, because we were both picking Notre Dame in this one, man. So that might give him an extra chip on his shoulder, Riley Leonard, in this game, who I do think is a really, really good quarterback, and one of the best quarterbacks not only in the country but in the draft. I'm taking Notre Dame in a closer one. I'm taking 28-24 Notre Dame. I do think Leonard will make enough plays in this game, but like you mentioned, man, that secondary for Notre Dame is really good. The linebacker unit has been fantastic, and that defensive line is ferocious. So far this season, as a really, really good Notre Dame defense that he's facing against. Also, Marcus Freeman, I think, is a terrific defensive mind as well at head coach. And then on the other side of the ball, man, I think this is the Audric Estime game. I think, you know, it's been kind of quiet about Audric Estime so far, even though he's the highest graded running back in the country, even though he has the most rushing yards in the country. There hasn't been that much talk about him, even though he's been that dominant. This is the game, I think, when it's a national audience, is on ABC, I believe. Yeah, it is on ABC. This is the game where I think people go, oh, Audric Estime is a superstar. And this is one of the best running backs in the country, one of the best running backs in this year's draft as well. This is the game for him, because I think it's a vulnerable Duke run defense, and Estime has been fantastic to start the season. I think this is the game where people really start to take notice of him as one of the best running backs in college football. But that's what we got, man, for our Week 5 preview. Once again, a loaded slate of college football. It's not like last week, but then again, we'll never see probably another slate like last week, Dalton. So any parting thoughts about this Week 5 that we got coming up?
No, I mean, the only uncomfortable thing for me is I picked in all five of these games. I picked the road team, so we'll see. Yeah. We'll see where that goes, but I think you've got some games where, like, styles, you know, like take last week with Colorado and Oregon, and you had teams with two completely different styles, right? And I think you saw a couple of games like that last week. This week, I think you've got, especially in these five games, teams that are very, very similar, right? Utah and Oregon State with physicality. Kansas and Texas want to spread you out and just get the ball to all these weapons. LSU and Ole Miss, you know, want to take deep shots, and whether they're successful or not kind of dictates the game for them. Notre Dame and Duke, they play pretty similar football. It's just that I think Notre Dame is better at it. And Colorado, USC, it's all about the quarterback. So you got a lot of teams that play similar styles, and obviously we're in conference now, and these teams know each other very, very well, and who's going to bring the wrinkles. But this is, especially in conference, these are the games that start to dictate the standings. You know, Oregon State, look, they can bounce back. They can bounce back against another good team in Utah. Look, you're in Pac-12 right now. It's murderer's row, right? Yeah. They can really set themselves back up to compete in the Pac-12. You know, Ole Miss coming off a big loss. I think you got some teams coming off big losses here, right? Notre Dame, we got a rebound. Ole Miss, we got a rebound. If they don't rebound in this game, their season's pretty much shot.
Yeah,
it's just the LSU and Bama, like it always is. You know, you Colorado rebound is for a lot of these teams. This is rebound week. You just, you know, come out, play better. Look, four teams make the playoff, and four teams are not going undefeated.
Yeah,
so you know, I think that's the part where Texas has to be really, really careful. Mm-hmm. Is that don't just assume you're going undefeated.
Yeah,
it's not same old Kansas. You know, that game 2 years ago you mentioned, you had two teams really just starting to find success. Now you've got two teams trying to establish themselves as contenders. Look, if Kansas wins this game, you're going to look at them completely different.
Oh, yeah.
Completely different. They're going to find themselves in the top 15, if not higher.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if Kansas wins this game, you're going to go, whoa, can they win the Big 12? Is that like a real thing? Because we've already seen K-State lose.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma is always good, but they weren't great against Cincinnati last week. You got some teams here who have a chance to establish themselves. It's going to be interesting here to see where the standings start to shake out in the next week or two, and if these conferences start looking the way we think they're going to look.
Yeah, Absolutely. And not only that, I mean, that's a great point you made in rebound week. There's like a few other games I just want to shout out really quickly that I think you should keep an eye on. Florida, Kentucky is a game that I'm really excited about. It's a huge SEC East showdown. Georgia, Auburn, another big SEC game. And of course, I got to shout out my Syracuse Orange, who are 4-0 right now. I'm an alum of Syracuse, and they got Clemson this week at home, man. So I am pumped to see if Syracuse can do it against the 2-2 Clemson right now. And if Syracuse wins, I think they'll certainly be ranked after this week. And I actually have them my top 25 right now, man. So
is Syracuse what was I just thinking? They're playing Florida State too next week, aren't they? Don't
they have North Carolina,
Florida State back to back?
They got Clemson, then they got North Carolina, then they got Florida State the week after. They got that is literally
whose idea? Who did that to him? That's just mean. I'm like 4-0 and then just
then you go 4-3. You go 4-0 and then 4-3. I think they started 6-0 last year and they finished the season 7-6. So it was just like an easy first half of the schedule, then a brutal second half. It's kind of the same this year, but hopefully Syracuse can start 5-0, man. I'm hoping for that. But that's what we got, man, for our week 5 preview. We cannot wait to talk to you guys again on Monday with our week 5 review episode. Also, we're going to do some other new stuff pretty soon in terms of our review stuff. And, of course, the Week 6 preview the week after. But for Dalton Wasserman, for producer Eli back there, I'm Max Chadwick. Enjoy this weekend of college football, guys, because it is going to be fantastic. And, we'll see you guys on Monday.